Newsmakers is brought to you by the generosity of listeners like you, including Pam Adams and the Illiopian Oracles. I'm Gary Moore. On today's program,
all they could talk about was that he was too old. And I think that he's probably alleviated a lot of their fears and concerns.
Community activist and WPNV contributor Sherry Cannon unpacks President Biden's State of the Union address. Also,
Donald Trump has effectively taken over the Republican Party. And his most recent move with the leadership of the RNC just solidifies that. So, yes, you know, fundraising that goes to the RNC, there is a legitimate fear now that those funds will go to pay his legal bills. Yet the base does not have a problem with that.
Legal expert Raymond Pierce looks at Donald Trump's legal challenges. But first, my conversation with WPNV contributor Sherry Cannon. So what did you think of the speech?
I thought the speech was strong. I thought he hit every point that he needed to hit. I thought he showed a clear distinction between him and his opponent. I think he's ready.
And he put to rest, you think, concerns about his age?
I think so. I mean, one thing, he can't deny the fact that he's 81 years old. But what he definitely showed was that with those years comes experience. It comes, and I thought he was quick. I mean, even just how he was able to come back at them when they was, you know, kind of jeering and booing and stuff. He's quick on his feet. He knows policy. He understands what he's doing. He understands what needs to be done. And it's clear that he wants to do what's best for the American people.
You mentioned his opponent. You didn't say him by name. 45, Biden called him his predecessor. We're talking about Donald J. Trump. And did you get to see any of the Republican response with Senator Katie Britt?
I couldn't stomach all of it, but I did attempt to watch it. It was just such a, I don't understand what they were trying to portray. She looked like a little housewife that was ready to just break down in tears. I didn't see the relevance in anything that she said. I mean, she spent a lot of time talking about the border, but we do know that she was on the committee to help write the bill that she voted against.
So you weren't impressed?
No, not at all.
Now, you know, this country is very divided, bitterly divided, and that Republicans are saying the same thing about Biden's speech. But you think what they're saying about Biden's speech is simply political theater, that in their heart of hearts, they know that he is the more qualified candidate than Trump, but they have to play this role.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, truth be told, and I think everybody knows that they were hoping that Donald Trump would go away after he lost in 2020. But they're so afraid of the base because he's got a strong 35-40% of the country that's going to vote for him regardless. They will vote for him even if he gets convicted, many of them saying. So these people are spineless. They would rather go along, as we see with the lie about the election was stolen, as we see them all of a sudden having amnesia about January 6th, as we see that they pretend, you know, that Hunter Biden's done stuff and his father has stolen all this money or taken all these bribes, when every person that they try to use against them as a witness has fallen through, has actually, one of them even admitted he just lied. He was put there to deliberately deceive the country because he was being paid by one of our adversaries. So they have no credibility. And as a matter of fact, I don't think they have any integrity. And right now, I think some of them are even bordering on treason because how they're, you know, pumping up Putin and just being so disingenuous about the whole process.
So before the speech, how were you thinking in terms of what November would be like, how November would play out? Were you thinking Biden would edge out Trump? Do you think Biden has a better chance? He's going on the road, on the campaign trail. I want to say he's going to be in 5 different places over the next month or so. You think he's got momentum behind him?
I think he does have momentum. And the one thing that I'm pretty certain of, I've been listening to all of the news media that's been interviewing some of the people that was following Nikki Haley, some of the independents, some of the younger people that, you know, just all they could talk about was that he was too old. And I think that he's probably alleviated a lot of their fears and concerns. I was looking on Facebook, as a matter of fact, a young lady that's from Peoria said she just got $46,000 worth of school debt relieved. $46,000. It wiped out all her school debt. And she had a daughter in college, so she's still paying on her own college debt. Plus, she had to take out a parent loan for her daughter to go to school. So it wiped out part of that and all of hers. So this is the kind of stuff that I think we've just got to get out there, that the president has to get out there and all of the people working with him to let people know really how his policies affect you particularly, in particularly.
Right. You'll recall about a month or so ago, State Representative Jahan Gordon Booth, labor expert Mike Matika from Bloomington were invited to the White House to do a share-in with people from all over Illinois, all over Indiana, to talk about how Biden's policies have benefited their communities. And Matika, I interviewed him, he said they do plan to roll that stuff out between now and November to let people know, because most people look at inflation, gas prices, and milk prices, but they don't look at some of the big infrastructural things and other things that Biden has done for the economy in terms of the transportation bill, all the jobs that were created. You talked about the president having to lay this out. So he did outline some things in the speech, and let's unpack some of those things. He mentioned small business creation with minorities and Hispanics at a record level. We here at the Minority Business Development Center, we see a constant influx of entrepreneurs and people who are interested in opening their own businesses. What did you take from the speech last night in terms of specifics?
I took that he's being very intentional, and I think it's not an accident because he has the first African-American vice president serving with him, that they are very intentional about making sure that people of color is getting equity in his term. And he knows he hasn't done enough. He knows there's a lot of making up to do because we know that we're starting way behind, but he's being very intentional about trying to make those things better. He talked about, you know, HBCUs, putting more money in HBCUs. I mean, he just laid out a plethora of things. He talked about the climate. That's critical for young people. I know he talked about how many jobs it's going to be created with the electric car industry and about how he saved a dealership in Belvedere, Illinois. I mean, those are things that are just so close to home that we can, like, really say, that can affect me. That makes a difference in my life and people that I know's lives. So, yeah, I just think everything that he said was relevant, and it really was something that somebody was going to be able to say, yeah, that makes sense to me. I can see how that affects my life. Even when he talked about, you know, challenging the manufacturing industry or the food industry and how they raise their prices and reduce the sizes of the product that we
get. Shrinkflation.
Shrinkflation, right. How he talked about that and how they're challenging those type of things. Those things make a difference.
Yeah, the Labor Department this week released its jobs numbers, and I want to say some 275,000 jobs were created in February. But Mike Matika said something. He said, you could have a lot of positive economic news, but Americans tend to lean toward the negative. Are we a nation of discontents, always looking to blame something, you know, when something doesn't go right, we tend to look at the glass as being half empty?
I think it's human nature. I just think that's just how you have to really, it's easier to complain than to see the positive in things. And I mean, you look at babies do it. I mean, it's part of being a human that, you know, that the squeaky wheel, you know, gets the, well, all of those things just, it's part of nature. I don't think we're that much different from people in other countries or, you know, nations. I think that you have to work really hard at trying to understand that, you know, life, we're all living life, and we're all going to have different challenges. But, you know, at the end of the day, if we work together, if we stay connected, if we figure out that whole idea of President Obama, you know, his initiative about my brother's keeper, which is biblical. If we do all those things, we all win, and we can all win. It just makes no sense to me that somebody can, we send to Congress to represent us, and they can sit on their hands for 2 years, not pass a single bill that's going to affect our lives, you know, and that's okay. So the negative does get all the attention in the media and everything else, but we don't hold people accountable for it, those that we can hold accountable. And that's why, you know, my right now, my word is vote. Vote is your voice. Vote is your power. And you have the power to determine your life by determining who you put in office to represent things that's going to affect your life, whether it be local, state, or national. You must vote.
Let's talk international. And one of the main challenges that the Biden administration has faced has been the Israel-Hamas war. Biden, in polls of young African-Americans and Muslim Americans, fares pretty low because of his handling of that, the United States' support of Israel. And people, do you think people hear when he says Israel needs to do more to secure the safety of Palestinians? Or do you think he was too late with that message?
What I think has happened is what he says publicly and what he's doing behind the scenes are two different things. I think he's really leaning on Israel to pull back. I think it's just, there's politics in everything he does. And I think he and Vice President Harris, their rhetoric, their talk is getting a lot stronger. And I think that they're getting pushed in a corner where they're going to have to come out and just pretty much say, you know, our support has to be contingent upon how you continue treating the Palestinians. And I believe that they're getting there. But we know Netanyahu, he is trying to hold on to office. I believe that he's going to get to the place where they're going to say he needs to resign. They're going to, I don't think that it's really hidden. If you kind of listen, you understand and know what's going on. I don't think he's ever been happy with how the war has been, you know, going on in Israel, Gaza, but that's an ally. And so he had to walk a fine line, but he also, now he's got to understand too many people have died And we have to be more intentional about what he's saying publicly and how we are addressing Israel on how we're going to continue supporting them.
Yeah. Sherry, we're running out of time. I've been asking you a lot of questions. Anything that you wanted to impart that we didn't get to talk about?
Well, I think the main thing for me is that if you don't think you want to vote this cycle, it's going to be to your peril to set it out. I would offer anybody the opportunity to watch some YouTube that the NAACP has put out. You ran them on your radio station all February. We're running them now. We just started running the conversation that I had with several of our local leaders, and it's worth watching. It's on YouTube, and you can find it on NAACP Facebook page. It's about just a conversation with my friends about the importance of why we must vote. And if you look at what they're doing on the border, if you look at what they're doing with women's reproductive health, if you look at what different states are doing regarding banning books and all of the other things that take us backwards, you need to really understand that you have a part in this, because it's not just you today, but a lot of things that happen is going to affect your children and your children's children. We got a majority of conservatives on the Supreme Court that are making rulings every day that affect our lives. And the only way that changes is if we all are engaged and be part of the process, which is called voting.
All right. Sherry Cannon, WPNV contributor, host, community activist, and on the leadership team of the local chapter of the NAACP. Hey, thanks for being on Newsmakers.
It's always a pleasure.
Now to my conversation with legal expert and WPNV contributor Raymond Pierce. Raymond, you know as well as I do that every time Donald Trump is hit with a big legal challenge or gets indicted or gets fined or loses a battle in court, he seems to win at the polls with his base. And in the last month or so since I've talked to you, there have been a number of legal issues. Some have gone his way, others have not. Let's unpack some of them. One of the most recent cases, he was ordered to pay $83 million in the E. Jean Carroll case. He tried to delay it. He waited 25 days to seek a delay, and the judge chided him for that, saying, why did you wait so long? So now he has to pay that bond. That keeps Carroll from collecting the money while the appeal goes through. Am I correct?
Yeah, but the bond is a surety that almost like, you know, if you get arrested and you post bond, it's a surety to make sure you show up in court. So, yes, he didn't put up that money. He got something similar to a civil bail bondsman, a surety to put that money up for him.
Mm-hmm. You also are aware that the RNC has been reshuffled, and there are a number of people at the Republican National Committee, the convention, who are Trump supporters, and there's talk of the RNC paying his legal bills. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's sad. I'll say I got many friends who are Republicans. You know, they were establishment Republicans, if you want to call them that, who are hurt and troubled and about what has happened to their party. Donald Trump has effectively taken over the Republican Party. And this most recent move with the leadership of the RNC just solidifies that. So, yes, fundraising that goes to the RNC, there is a legitimate fear now those funds will go to pay his legal bills. Yet the base does not have a problem with that. I mean, the base is a group of consists of a group of people who will continue to support Donald Trump regardless of what he does, regardless of how he's indicted, regardless of whether the funds go to support his legal bills, because they are convinced he is expressing their anger at life and their position in this country, if not their position in the world. It's an unfortunate what's happening to the Republican Party. I personally believe, Gary, that it's healthy for the nation to have a healthy and vibrant two-party system. That means a healthy and vibrant Republican Party. But unfortunately, they are in decay. I think the cause of their decay today is its focal point is Donald Trump.
Talk to me about the Supreme Court. One of the legal victories you could say Trump got was a delay vis-a-vis the Supreme Court decision to hear his immunity from prosecution case. Let's back up a little bit, and I'll explain it in my layman's terms, and you can come back and clean this up. But essentially, the special counsel, Jack Smith, had asked the court to rule on Trump's idea that he is immune from prosecution, but to rule as quickly as possible, because Jack Smith has that January 6th case. This is the big federal case that implicates Trump in the events surrounding the insurrection. And the Supreme Court could have elected to let the Circuit Court of Appeals ruling stand. That court ruled that Trump does not have immunity from prosecution. The Supreme Court could have let that stand, but instead the court said, hey, we're going to hear the case in late April. Political analysts have said that all but assures that case won't be heard, go to trial until election time or afterwards. What are your thoughts?
Well, I understand why the United States Supreme Court decided to take the case, to hear the case. I understand that. I would have preferred that the Court of Appeals decision be allowed to stand, but I understand that given that there are justiciable issues here for the United States Supreme Court on appeal from the Circuit Court, I can understand why the United States Supreme Court has taken up this very, very important historic issue of presidential immunity. I get that. On the other hand, it is troubling time-wise for all the reasons you just said, because if the matter is heard in late April and it takes some time for the court to render its decision, and I'm just confident that the Supreme Court will ultimately rule that the president is not immune from criminal prosecution. I can't see how they can rule otherwise. It may not be a unanimous decision, but I just cannot see how the United States Supreme Court in any reading of the United States Constitution can rule that a president is immune to criminal prosecution, particularly in a situation like this. The concern is, as you have aptly stated, Gary, and that is that it leaves little time for Jack Smith to prosecute the case. Now, having said that, I personally hold out hope that a decision can be rendered by the Supreme Court and this trial could get underway in August. I believe that. Even given the time that Judge Chunskin has given, suggested that, actually has committed to giving the attorneys representing Donald Trump to prepare for the case, I imagine that clock is ticking now, and therefore that this case can begin in August. Is that ideal? No. I'm somewhat in disagreement with the pundits who believe that Jack Smith will not proceed with this case. I believe he will. I believe the United States Supreme Court is going to rule on this case in a timely fashion. They will rule that the president is not immune to criminal prosecution and that the prosecution will proceed at least 2-3 months before the November election. That's my personal belief.
President Biden, in his State of the Union address, kind of dressed down the Supreme Court with the justices present. Clarence Thomas was not there. We can talk more about him in a moment. But as it related to women's reproductive health, you are familiar with the Alabama Supreme Court's case regarding IVF. And many people look at the polarized opinions on the part of Republicans, it's kind of scrambled eggs in terms of where they stand. On the one hand, frozen embryos, you have to discontinue IVF. But on the other hand, life begins with conception. You know, it's a hard thing. But I don't want to get into the abortion so much as the legal aspect of it, with regards to women's reproductive health, and President Biden saying that he will, if there's a Democratic Congress, he will push for a law that will, in effect, reinstate Roe v. Wade.
Well, you know, that was a historic moment for a president doing a State of the Union address to basically call out the United States Supreme Court. I've never heard of anything like that before, but I believe that the president had every right to do so. And I think it was appropriate for him to do that. It's unfortunate because I, as an attorney, as a member, you know, of the bar, and I have a great deal of respect for our judiciary, and I believe, personally, I believe it is the body that has held up during all this crisis, because clearly the legislative body has collapsed. The executive branch under Donald Trump collapsed. It was the judicial body that has held through, you know, during the time of the insurrection and the attempt to overthrow the government. But now, having said that, it's clear that, you know, public opinion has fallen in terms of its regard for our United States Supreme Court. So the reason why is because in prior years when you and I were growing up, no one thought of the United States Supreme Court or any judicial branch, quite frankly, as being political. But it's not that way anymore. I mean, you just talked about Clarence Thomas. He is, you know, obviously, he can be bought. It's very, very sad that strong component of our checks and balances system, that being the court system, is in the situation it is right now. And as for the abortion piece, look, you know, are there people who genuinely believe that they are protecting life? Yes. But the bulk of them, I believe it is just a political position. It's a political position that was manufactured back in the early 80s. By Jerry Falwell and that crowd to checkmate an evangelical Christian president, Jimmy Carter. to sell that, hey, look, he's a Democrat and he may be a Christian, but he's not with us on this important issue of when life begins. I think that was all a political position. Joe Biden knows that. So he's calling out this United States Supreme Court on what is more of a political position with regard to when life begins, I think was fair play.
Lastly, but certainly not least, Fonnie Willis in Georgia. Will she survive? It appears things, although it got off to a rocky start, may be turning her way.
Well, Gary, you know how I feel about that. I'm highly disappointed in that. All that, I'm very high on Fannie Willis. I told you months ago that was the case to watch. What has transpired was A, unnecessary, and B, just so unfortunate. It has tarnished the case. It has tarnished her reputation. It will tarnish her politically and her career. It will. She'll survive it. The case is strong. I just don't know. I just don't have the high level of confidence that I once expressed to you with regard to that case being able to be prosecuted anytime soon and to have the impact that it will, because a decent attorney will just be able to just wrap that entire case before a jury, remember. We'll be able to wrap that entire case up in the shroud that has been created because of the lack of judgment on behalf of Fannie Willis. So she's a great person. I think she's done a good job in terms of putting together that case. I just think that she showed poor judgment in selecting her special prosecutor, someone with whom she had a personal relationship. Just totally unnecessary. With all the attorneys she could have picked, you didn't need to pick this person and could have avoided this entire thing. I'm not beating up on the sister. I still support her. I just think it was a bad decision.
Yeah. And Letitia James in New York says if Trump can't pay up the $500 million, she's going to go after his properties.
And she will. And that's right, correct? You can't pay your house note. What happens? The bank forecloses, correct?
Right.
If you have a civil damage against you and you don't pay up, you can go to the sheriff's office and get possession of someone's car or their values in order to be made, for you to be made whole. Donald Trump is no different. It may be a high amount of money, but he has assets. He has buildings in New York that can be seized by the state of New York to pay the bills that he owes. So, hooray for Letitia James. I think it's only right. I think the case was very clear. Donald Trump's character, in my opinion, is in line with someone who would defraud the government of the state of New York in terms of overvaluating his properties. I don't doubt for a moment that he did that. He just seems to be that type of scurrilous, mischievous and malicious individual. I believe it, and the court has produced it. He's been found guilty of that, and the only question is how much he owed, and now that's been decided. So, hooray for the criminal justice system and the civil justice system and its workings, and I applaud State Attorney General Letitia James in her action, and particularly in the way and the manner in which she has prosecuted this entire case.
Raymond Pierce, legal expert, WPNV contributor. Hey, thanks so much for being on Newsmakers.
All right, thank you, Gary. Take care, brother.
Newsmakers is brought to you by the generosity of listeners like you, Pam Adams, the Iliopian Oracles, and you, our listeners. If you would like to make a donation to keep this broadcast and others on WPNV going, you're encouraged to go to the MBDC website. That stands for the Minority Business Development Center. Newsmakers on WPNV. WPNV, we're Peoria's neighborhood voice.